Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Is it me? Something tells me it's not. Or is just about everybody ticked off? The right is ticked off at the left. The left is ticked off at the right. The center and the centrists are ticked off at everybody. The people in the Middle East on the opposite sides of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Don't even get me started. Well, is there anything that can be done about this? It seems like the whole world just about feels some sense of alienation. They don't feel as connected to their community, to their neighbors, to their elected officials, to the loyal opposition in the political sphere as maybe they did 10, 15, 20 years ago. And you remember, 20 years ago, it's not as exactly as if people were singing Kumbaya. What can be done about it? Well, there's a new book out which has some solutions, and the person who wrote it, it has been one of America's great thinkers for quite some time. I'm very pleased to welcome Philip K. Howard, who has written a new book called Everyday Freedom: Designing the Framework for a Flourishing Society. Very pleased to welcome best-selling author Philip K. Howard. Philip, great to talk to you again.
Great to be with you, Frank.
So, a framework for a flourishing society, that sounds pretty good. Before we get to the framework, let's talk about the problems. What are the problems with American society as you see it? What are the root causes of alienation in this country?
Well, I think the populist resentment and the failures of government to do anything, you know, to fix homelessness, to fix bad schools, to do almost anything sensibly, all are symptoms of system failure. That we built this governing and legal system up after the 1960s that was very different than the way it was before. It was designed not only to tell people what they should do, but exactly how to do it, with 1,000-page rule books and procedures, trials for everything, like school teacher has to prove that Johnny threw the pencil first or whatever. And then this idea of individual rights that became the rights to get something for yourself rather than rights that are common to everybody, like government can't take your property away. And all those things combined to make it so that nothing could work and that people can't even be themselves. So you know, people go to the office and they have to go to mandatory training that basically says, you know, don't ever tell a joke. Don't offend anybody. Ask somebody what their preferred pronoun is. I mean, you know, why do I have to use someone's preferred pronoun? It's a free country. We've created this crazy system, the gist of which is, or the upside is it really no one's in charge of anything. And so it's like a giant legal free-for-all. And it's very frustrating, and we talk about how to get it back, but there is a way to get it back. But there's a complete breakdown of authority, whether it's in the schools, in the universities, in government to get things done, to fix homelessness, for example. And so everyone's frustrated. So people go to extreme solutions on the left, on the right, everywhere.
And it's not just a breakdown of authority. It's a breakdown in belief and respect for all these institutions, right? Certainly government, but as you mentioned, educational and academic institutions. I would say it even extends to religious institutions and really almost every institution out there. Certainly the media. Don't even get me started.
Yeah, that's right. Trust is at an all-time low in America's institutions. The only institutions really still trusted are the military and small business. That's what the data shows. But the trust is broken down because the people in the institutions, particularly people in charge, feel that they can't do what's right. Because all this law gets in the way.
If people are just tuning in, we're talking with Philip K. Howard. He's been a leader of government and legal reform for quite some time. He's chair of Common Good, which is a nonpartisan coalition which is dedicated to simplifying laws. He's also a best-selling author. Philip, you mentioned small business. One of the real obstacles towards people opening up a small business, whatever it happens to be, a neighborhood bar, a roofing business, landscaping business, even a small doctor's office or a small law firm, is they don't want to deal with the morass of red tape and regulation that comes with that. This is not a left-wing thing or a right-wing thing. This is an everybody thing. You had an interesting essay titled A Restoration of Vitality to American Institutions. How do we cut through some of that red tape to get to a point where the one institution that, or one of two institutions that you have highlighted as being still trustworthy, can actually flourish and multiply?
Right. Well, the thing that those two institutions have, military and small business, is that somebody's in charge. So the military, particularly in combat, they have a philosophy that whoever's on the ground, you know, whoever the officer is got to do whatever they think is right. They don't tell them what to do. They don't tell them to, you know, look at the rule book. A small business, when people go talk to the cleaners or the hardware store, they know the person. They trust the person is trying to solve their problem. They're in charge. Now, when you go to a big institution, you're dealing with a bureaucrat. They're not trying to solve your problem.
So whether it's the workplace where there's all sorts of red tape, you mentioned these compliance videos and mandatory trainings for this and that, or whether it's schools where teachers are drowning in red tape, teachers are afraid to scold a student for fear of being reprimanded or a lawsuit, what can be done about it? It seems like this is such a litigious culture where everybody, workplace managers, teachers, even principals, are afraid to even look at someone cross-eyed for fear that that could jeopardize their job. What can we do realistically in the current climate to, I don't know, winnow down some of this red tape?
Well, the bad news is we have to change the system. And the first step to that is to have a narrative like we're having today about system failure, about the fact that these laws don't let anybody be in charge. And so I'm talking with leaders in a whole bunch of areas. It's been all afternoon with a leader of the homelessness cures about coming up with templates for change that restore clear lines of authority for people to get things done. And we need to, I gave a speech at National Review today on that. You know, so we need to create a movement that's adopted by a political party that Americans like that says, it's time for a spring cleaning. This system we've built up doesn't let anybody be themselves, doesn't let anybody get anything done. And the litmus test for the new system should be, is the person with responsibility free to make a sensible decision?
The party that has historically held itself out as a champion of business in general, but including small business, and reducing government regulations and reducing red tape, has traditionally been the Republicans. And they've mocked a lot of the particularly labor and environmental regulations that have emerged in states like California, New York, for instance. From your perspective, have the Republicans been better on not adding to the red tape problem than the Democrats?
Yes, they have, but the Republicans have this idea that no one in the state should have authority because they might abuse it. And the irony is, if you don't give the environmental official the authority to actually decide what needs to be studied in environmental reviews, say, oh, just study these two things, in 50 pages in 3 months, give me the report. It becomes this process of no pebble left unturned that takes 5 years and thousands of pages. So you can't create a government better than people. So government needs to be more accountable. I've written government officials. I've written a lot about that. But for us to be free, whoever we work with or whoever we deal with in the government has to have authority to make sensible decisions. You can't create government better than people. And we tried to do that. And that's why we have this, well, there are 150 million words of binding federal law and regulation. I mean, it's literally impenetrable.
If people are just tuning in, we're talking with Philip K. Howard. His new book is Everyday Freedom, Designing the Framework for a Flourishing Society. Philip, one of the things that you have tried to do with this book is offer a vision to re-empower Americans and unclog government. We talked a little bit about the clogged government aspect of things. Let's talk a little bit about empowerment. Again, one of the things that I think brings a lot of people together, left, right, center, wherever, is they feel like they as an individual can't make much of a difference. They can't make much of a difference in electoral outcomes. They can't make much of a difference in public policy. And they feel alienated from the system because there's this tremendous feeling of powerlessness. Is that just a perception that Americans have? And what can they do to feel empowered, Philip?
Oh, we need to give people back. It's not a perception. They are powerless. That's why you have this stampede of populist resentment. I mean, people hate it. You know, at every level of public life, we need to re-empower people on the ground. What works is what happens on the ground. So Big Brother, Washington, ought to spin out most social services to local communities, and the only proper role for federal government may be funding, but also setting up guardrails to make sure that, you know, people in the community don't go nuts or whatever. But in general, people in the community ought to have ownership for the community, how they deal with homelessness, how they deal with their schools, how they deal with other kinds of social services, housing, etc. And we've tried to kind of regularize and systematize everything so that now everybody feels like Charlie Chaplin in a movie on an assembly line.
Right. Modern times, I think, right?
Yeah. Everybody's just getting swept along by this bureaucracy. And what to me is most absurd is that the experts treat this system like it's a state of nature, like it's the Moses came down the mountain with the Ten Commandments, but it's the 10 million commandments. So it's not a state of nature. It's a man-made accident of the last 50 years, only since the 1960s, that has failed. It's a version of central planning like the Soviets had, except the planners are dead. There's somebody who wrote thick rule books 45 years ago, who's long gone, that people now spend their whole day going through reading the rule book and complying with this stuff. And it makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, a lot of these regulatory systems cause more problems than these, you know, worker safety rules don't work because people aren't focusing on safety. They're just focusing on keeping their paperwork in order.
What about social media? Social media is a big part of everybody's day, and it's also been the place where, over the last few years, a lot of these so-called slogans which become viral on social media lead to movements. You write about Stop the Steal and Defund the Police. More recently, there's things like Free Palestine and things of that nature. What role does social media play in either the alienation of individuals or, I don't know, the efforts to restore a flourishing society?
Well, it's very destructive because it allows people to go into echo chambers that aren't related to reality, you know, on all sides, right? I mean, people just go nuts You know, they get stuck in some little group and they think that, you know, they believe that the Israelis piloted the planes into 9/11. I mean, you know, or that Sandy Hook shooting didn't occur. I mean, it's all kinds of craziness. And the only way out of that is to put people back in reality. Give them. So if you give authority to a local community and a local official to decide how to do anything, you know, to run the school a different way or to deal with the homeless a different way, that authority has a gravitational force. People who know the person say, yeah, I don't want that jerk to be making a decision. I want to get involved, you know, and do it in a sensible way. And then, you know, there's a lot of sort of evidence that when people get together to solve a problem, they tend to forget about all their abstract theories. They try to solve the problem. And
go ahead.
Yeah, no, and that's just what's missing, is that people are sitting at home, divorced from democracy, because democracy is taking itself away from them. It's like a software program, or tries to be. And so they get lost in the social media, and they're not sitting on a street corner, you know, trying to deal with the issue.
You write that there's a vacuum in the 2024 political debate. No party or candidate offers a governing vision that deals with the root causes of alienation and failure. The Trump people would say that Donald Trump, by standing up to globalism, by fighting for things like free trade, by fighting for things like a secure border, that he's trying to stand up for the against the root causes of alienation and failure. The Biden people would say that by fighting for things like, you know, cheaper drugs for people that need to do things like take insulin, or being very pro-labor and fighting for things like a higher minimum wage and preserving Social Security, they would say that he is trying to do some of the things that it deals with the root causes of alienation and failure. Why do you feel that both candidates and parties are lacking in a strategy to deal with this?
Well, it's an excellent question. All those things you mentioned are policies. And they're things that we need sensible to, you know, we need to secure the border. You know, we need to come up with a reasonable trade policy. We need to make drugs affordable. All those things are policies. Those are fine. But most of the problems of our society are problems of execution. They're not problems of what the goals are. They're the problems of making a school work, or dealing with the homeless, or getting a permit for a power line. Containing, making it so that doctors and nurses don't spend half their day filling out forms, you know, and burning out. You know, so we've created a system that drives people nuts and makes things fail because of how it does things. And they're arguing about more immigration, less immigration, whatever. They're not dealing with the root causes of what make people frustrated. I mean, most people in the country don't experience immigration. They don't experience only indirectly trade policy. Most people don't have probably don't have an insulin problem. But it's not that those things shouldn't be solved, but they're not the reason why everybody feels so alienated. And there's a lot of evidence of powerlessness and the sense that people feel like it's out of their control. People can deal with problems and accept them if they can roll up their sleeves and have some say in them.
Final question, sir, and we're talking with Philip K. Howard. Everyday Freedom is his book, Designing the Framework for a Flourishing Society. If there's one key takeaway that people should get from your book or for our discussion, what is it? What is the first thing that needs to change, and how do we change it?
You have to put people back in charge. And we create a system that was designed to be, you know, like a puzzle, like a crossword puzzle. And it's out of everyone's control and it doesn't work. It's like a bad version of central planning. And it drives people nuts. I mean, people hate it. And they grow to hate each other. So we need to put people in charge have a framework that's more like the Constitution and come to grips, like an addict has to first accept the fact that they're an addict to be fixed. Well, we're addicted to law. There's hardly any interaction in society today that doesn't have legal implications. That's not what freedom is supposed to be. Freedom is supposed to be a broad field where people can agree, disagree, not like each other, be offensive, whatever. So we need to understand, we need to come to grips with the fact that this system we've built up is not a state of nature. It's a failure. It's a failure of freedom. And when we get that idea out there, then we can get candidates to run on it and change it. It's actually not that hard to actually change this stuff because it's a lot simpler than the current system. The Constitution's only 7,000 words. The current federal law is 150 million words. Yeah,
that's for sure. Philip Howard, Chair of the Common Good. We're going to have to end it there. I appreciate the time. Let's talk again soon.
Okay, thanks, Frank.
Thank you. If you want to comment on any portion of our discussion, give me a call, 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.